सोच विचार के साथ मेरा नाम नदीम उल हक है
और मेरा नाम अंजुम अल्ताफ है।
वेलकम टू सोच विचार। टुडे वी आर गोइंग टू बी डिस्कसिंग अ वेरी इम्पोर्टेंट कंट्रीब्यूशन टू पाकिस्तान। अमन फाउंडेशन हैज़ बीन सेट अप इन पाकिस्तान। अमन फाउंडेशन इज नाउ ऑलमोस्ट आई थिंक 8 or 9 ईयर्स ओल्ड and this foundation has been set up by RF Naqvi, a major entrepreneur in the Middle East who's mashallah done very well. He has obviously amassed a lot of wealth, but unlike other wealthy Pakistanis, he's prepared to give back. He's the first Pakistani, I would say, who has set up a substantial philanthropic foundation in Pakistan. This is called Aman Foundation. I think you will be impressed when you hear about it. Today I've got the CEO online, Malik Jalal. He is a CEO. He is the head of this organization, the chief executive officer of Aman Foundation. And I am very happy to have him on Soch Pachar. And hopefully we will learn about Aman Foundation. But we will also discuss the concept behind it, why RF Naqvi set it up, what they hope to achieve. We will also discuss the concept of social entrepreneurship and what kind of a role it can play in Pakistan. So I think it'll be a very interesting episode, and I encourage all researchers, because as I keep saying, Soch Vichar is for Pakistani economists. I encourage all researchers to please try and do a paper or some research on Aman Foundation. I think Malik Jalal, we'll ask him. He will be available to help you. We need more research and thinking on this subject. So with that, let me welcome Malik Jalal. And Jalal Saab, first, can you tell us a little bit about yourself so that our viewers know, your background? Then we'll get to the Aman Foundation.
Dr. Saab, first of all, thank you very much for inviting me to this to the podcast. Or it's great to talk to economists and fellow economists. I'm also at least economist by education. I did my undergraduate at the London School of Economics, BSc Econ.
Oh, my old school! And that's wonderful. Yeah.
Yes. So I'm a fellow, if only just by training, economist. We are in good company.
Wonderful.
I was a chartered accountant in London, mm-hmm. and I trained there. And then I went into investment banking, mm-hmm. which was at the Goldman Sachs. I was there for about 5 years.
Goldman Sachs? Then, so you are one of the people who ruined the world.
So I'll tell you the story about my move from Goldman Sachs into development.
But let me also say, Jalal, Goldman Sachs. Let me also say, Jalal, Goldman Sachs is not known for socially aware people. So, what happened to you? Did you miss out on something?
No. So, Goldman Sachs is misperceived, at least in the market, to be very profit conscious. But if you look at some of the initiatives they have done, 10,000 women initiative, 10,000 small business initiative. They have something called community.
Look, we'll do another show on Goldman Sachs. Sure, I think it's an important thing to do. But right now,
but it's important to say, okay, they try to weave in that into the business side of it. Mm-hmm. And then I had this moment of epiphany, which happened at the financial crisis. That was the 16th October, 2008, after Lehman went down. And I thought, maybe there is something else to do and something else to explore other than investment banking. And, mm-hmm. That took me on a journey, and I ended up in the Kennedy School of Government in 2009 and to do something called the MPA ID, Master in Public Administration and International Development Program. Or uske baad, so I was very interested in how countries develop, how I can help Pakistan grow and develop. And then I joined a company called Abraj Group, whose founder is Mr. Arif Naqvi, mm-hmm. in their SME investing fund, investing in small, medium enterprises, mostly mm-hmm. earlier on in the Levant, in Lebanon, mm-hmm. and in Jordan. But then later on, creating an SME fund for Pakistan, with the USAID and
CDC. That gives me much more to talk to you about. We must talk about that at some stage too, because it's a very interesting topic.
We must talk about that.
But
is exactly, because you were part of it, and you've, I'm sure you've seen it from the public policy.
I think it's a wonderful enterprise.
About 2 years, So 2 years ago, this opportunity came to come to Aman Foundations as the CEO, and that's where I moved back to Pakistan after 18 years. Mm-hmm. And the reason why it is because, Aman, and we'll talk more about it.
So tell me, let's get to Aman. Tell me, let's go back to history. Tell us, mm-hmm. how was Aman Foundation founded and what is the thinking behind it?
So, the Aman Foundation, in a way, represents the philosophy, thinking, or at least personal experience of Mr. Arif Naqvi and his wife, Ms. Faiza Naqvi. Mm-hmm. And they were philanthropists even before Aman started, but they were doing it like they funded a lot of TCF schools. They have been giving a lot of money for Room to Read, but they were giving money to different institutions. And they felt that what we need is institutionalized philanthropy. Mm-hmm. So how can we, instead of doing ad hoc, put all of it together, create an organization with the right systems, processes, and do philanthropy and in an institutionalized manner. Mm-hmm. And that's where the idea of Aman started from. Mm-hmm. They had, they met, and this is an actual incident. They were in a hotel in Dubai, and they met a Pakistani guy who was serving them. And he said basically that because he doesn't know English, as relative to other people who are at the hotel, he gets paid 25% to 30% less than them. So that really propelled them, and they said, let's invest in skills development.
You know, that's absolutely wonderful. I'll tell you also, Jalal, I have a similar incident when I was in Dubai for a short while, and my friend Hafiz Sheikh, who became the finance minister, was there too. He had a driver who was FA pass, and we used to spend a lot of time talking to him. And he used to tell us that, the biggest problem that he has is English. He's got the education, but he doesn't have English. So I remember spending a lot of time trying to talk to him in English, to teach him English. This is a major impediment. Yes. You're absolutely right. But go ahead.
So we looked around and we said, how can we do something at scale? In Pakistan, because we had institutionalized philanthropy, and God had been very generous with Mr. Arif Naqvi and Ms. Faiza Naqvi, so he gave an endowment to Aman Foundation in order to set it up. But the idea was never, and this is I must make it
now,
clear,
if it's not a secret, not if it's ever, not a secret, what is the size of the endowment?
Was $100 million.
$100 million. Now that is something. Hold on for a minute. $100 million. That is really something amazing, and we should be very proud of that. I mean, they gave $100 million out of their own funds to set up this foundation. I think this must be the largest foundation in Pakistan, am I right?
I would imagine that. And certainly very generous, and certainly the largest donation to social causes in Pakistan, and a largest donation focused on a single city. Because of course Aman Foundation is focused at the moment in Karachi.
So let me first applaud. Let me first take a minute and let's both applaud and have an audience applaud this endeavor too, because really giving $100 million is not a joke, and allowing things to happen. Now tell me, what is the conceptualization after they made the foundation?
So the conceptualization, and it comes from their vision, is that $100 million, for that matter, $1 billion is not enough to solve the problems of Pakistan. Mm-hmm. You know that you've worked in the government.
Fair enough. Yeah.
So what is important is to create a platform. Mm-hmm. What is important is to create systems and processes that is able to deliver hundreds of billions of dollars through either other partners and other other institutions. Mm-hmm. So why don't we invest and build infrastructure that is able to deploy that kind of capital and bring in more partners in the future? Mm-hmm. And Aman becomes an institution that is a catalyst for change in Pakistan.
So it becomes a platform for further philanthropy.
It becomes a platform philanthropy.
Okay.
And that's why they didn't call it Arif and Faiza Naqvi Foundation. They called it the Aman Foundation.
By the way, that's also another thing to applaud, that we Pakistanis tend to do so much just in our own names. We don't think of something outside. And again, that's another thing to applaud Arif and Faiza for, that they did something without necessarily bringing their ego into it. That's wonderful again. So go ahead.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So that's how the Aman Foundation mm-hmm. got started is and that's the whole vision behind it. That it's the whole platform in which other partners, be it government, be it individual philanthropists, be it foreign donors, can come and partner with us to deliver impact mm-hmm. at scale. So you know, that's the main theory of thinking behind behind okay. Aman Foundation and what we have done since then.
You chose only Karachi yes. to work in. Why not the whole of Pakistan? 100 million is a lot of money. Why can't it stretch to the whole of Pakistan?
So that comes from the mindset of social enterprise. You need to focus your attention mm-hmm. and you need to focus your money on a single point, a single area.
Interesting.
Because okay. if you disperse it over a whole country, mm-hmm. you will not be able to achieve much impact. Mm-hmm. So the whole idea is that Karachi represents the humanity of Pakistan. Karachi has all ethnicities, all communities, all challenges of Pakistan. So if we can mm-hmm. solve the problems of Pakistan, we have a template.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Of Karachi, if you solve problems of Karachi, we have a template, and that template can then be replicated in other parts of Pakistan. So that's why we focus our resources, our capital, our people on Karachi, and particularly in healthcare and in skills development.
Mm-hmm. So you're only working in two areas, healthcare and skill development.
Again, yes. So hamara jo, you know, our area, our thinking is focus and impact. Okay. We thought that these are the two areas that are most mm-hmm. much needed, and that's where we are working on.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So in terms of skills development, you know, we have the Aman Institute of Vocational Training, also mm-hmm. called Aman Tech, mm-hmm. which is the single largest vocational training program in Pakistan in a single location. We have graduated about 6,700 students since it was formed in 2011. We have a placement rate of about 74%.
Not bad.
And we have industry and partner linkages with a lot of industries such as the UNIS textile mills, OMB of Australia, and a lot of other corporates that we place our students with. And some of them mm. have been placed abroad as well. But our idea is that we train our students in about 12 trades.
You said that you are the largest skill training institution. I thought the government...
At a single location.
Oh, because I thought the government has TEFTAs, which were doing a lot of skill training. They have a number of skill... How do you compare yourself to the government institutions?
So, no. So, we, at a single location, we are the largest one.
Okay.
So, mm-hmm. the TEFTAs, Punjab TEFTAs, they are, in terms of numbers, they might be doing more, mm-hmm. but they are dispersed across the whole province.
Right.
So, we have... At one point, in a single location, we have 2,200 students getting trained.
Not bad. Good.
About 4,000 in a year, which is mm-hmm. the single largest location.
And you say you place 74% of them.
We have placed 74% of them. We spend a lot of effort mm-hmm. in terms of creating industry linkages, and we can talk more about it as well, is that we work a lot with the industry. We design and customize a curriculum to industry needs. Or mm-hmm. uske liye jo hai hum, and that's how... We get our students placed.
Beautiful. And the skill training that you do, I see that you have about 8 or 10 areas that you are working in. There's a number of different areas, right?
Yes.
Let me get to that. There's a number of different areas that you're working in.
For instance, we have auto mechanic. Mm-hmm. We have electronic. We mm-hmm. have electrical. We have mechanical. Mm-hmm. We have something called RAC, which is refrigeration. Mm-hmm. We have CAD, CAM, and CAD civil. We have fabrication, and we have stitching and printing. So these are the different mm-hmm. trades that mm-hmm. we do. We are going to go more into IT-based mm-hmm. trades, like digital literacy and those kind of trades we're going to go into in the future.
Okay, excellent. And you've got a number of partnerships with people, right? You've got a large number of partnerships with various organizations around the country and internationally as well.
Gee, so, you know, as I said to you, Aman is about the platform, and anyone, everyone who wants to come and join the partnership, be it the government or private sector are more than welcome. So, you know, in the skills development, we have partnership with the German institution GIZ. Mm-hmm. We have with City and Guilds, of course, which is the British accreditation agency. Mm-hmm. We have USAID. We have a large program being run with USAID. Mm-hmm. And in the area of health, we are partners with Gates. And the Packard Foundation, in fact,
Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, right?
That's right.
The largest foundation in the world.
Exactly, and the one most very influential and also most blue chip and prestigious. And so, when it came to working in Pakistan, we are very privileged that they chose the Aman Foundation to choose us to work.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in terms of health, you have about 5 or 6 programs, as I see on your website.
Yes, so the way to think about this, as an economist, you would appreciate it, is to think about the healthcare ecosystem. Mm-hmm. So the way we work is that we have got a community health workers program, which covers a population of about 1.1 million people in Karachi, but mostly focusing on women and child health. Mm-hmm. So ye jo hai na, gharon mein jaake, they can look after people.
Right.
Then we have got something called the telehealth, which is for follow-up consultation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you have some kind of medical ailment, you can call them and they can refer you to a nearby doctor. The third one is a community clinic, whereby you know you can get cheap medicine, you can get a doctor, a GP to look after you. Mm-hmm. And then we've got the famous, by which Aman is mostly known, by the Aman Ambulance.
Right.
So Aman Ambulance is something that would take you from a clinic all the way to hospital. Mm-hmm. So you know the call, what is called the whole referral pathway, which is from your home to your community clinic to your tertiary care hospital. We've tried to intervene at different levels in order to make sure that people get treated where it's the most efficient, cost effective, and most timely and efficient to do that. We can treat people's home, we can treat in the community clinic, over the phone, and if not, then we can take them to the hospital.
So
we have made a whole link.
You got the whole ecosystem, the value chain in health, so to speak. Now tell me, what is the SUKH initiative in Mashal?
जी सो के इनिशिएटिव जो है हमारा गेट्स फाउंडेशन और पैकेज के साथ हमारा मदर एंड चाइल्ड हेल्थ केयर के ऊपर है जिसमें हम मैटरनल हेल्थ केयर हम देखते हैं दैट कवर्स द पॉपुलेशन अबाउट 1 मिलियन पीपल एंड इट्स अ 15 मिलियन डॉलर पार्टनरशिप
ओके
जो वी हैव डन इट विद देम एंड दिस इज गोना लास्ट टिल 2018
ओके एंड मशल व्हाट इज मशल
मशल इज अ प्रोग्राम वन एरिया व्हिच इज वेरी अंडर reported and underappreciated is the incidence of mental health in population like Pakistan. So Mashal, of course, and something we brought to Pakistan from England called BNP, Basic Needs Pakistan, Basic Needs International, Kaam Laaye Thay, and Mashal is our program. It has something called mental health first aid. Ye karte hain, and they provide a free clinic for mental health patients.
Does this also include drug
women,
rehabilitation?
So we have we manage a facility in Mithyari near Hyderabad which does that we've taken it over from the government and we are able to do that but generally the program does mostly mental counseling and jo log suffer karte hain and then help them get into livelihood.
The reason I asked is because now one hears that drugs are becoming an epidemic in Karachi and people are quite concerned about it.
Gee, I can only imagine that. I don't think we don't do it through these programs. But wahan pe jo hamari government facility ko hum run karte hain wahan pe ye hota hai.
Okay. Now tell me, health and education, I mean, nobody can fault you on that. They're absolutely wonderful. Much needed, huge areas to work in. We've got a large population, young population. The government is underserving the whole the social sector. So absolutely, it's important to do that. But let me ask you, now that you've been in the field for 7-8 years, what kind of, if you give us an idea of the reach in Karachi, you've told us some figures for tech. What about health? What kind of reach do you have?
देखिए हमारा जो कम्युनिटी हेल्थ वर्कर्स प्रोग्राम है वो तो और ये जो सुख के थ्रू जो है दैट रीचेज अबाउट 1.1 मिलियन पॉपुलेशन पर ये कवर करता है थ्रू आउट द ईयर. उसके अलावा जो हमारा लेट्स से कि एम्बुलेंसेज है, वी डू अबाउट 110,000 इंटरवेंशंस अ ईयर.
ओके.
एंड सो फ्रॉम द इंसेप्शन वी हैव डन अबाउट 840,000 इंटरवेंशंस इज जस्ट looking after patients and taking them to hospital. उसके अलावा जो हमारा telehealth वगैरह telehealth है, उसमें we have done about 624,000 calls, both inward and outward in terms of dealing with people's ailments or referring them. इतना हमने किया हुआ है. So this is a footprint and the impact footprint is quite significant.
Good. So now basically you've covered, let's say, roughly about 1/10 of Karachi in terms of population. And in terms of education, you're covering probably about, again, a similar sort of percentage of the population. So that's a fairly significant effort. But tell me, what are your future plans? Where do you go from here?
Okay, our future plans is that we have, mashallah, say, by the grace of Allah and through our partners and our stakeholders, we have got what we call it blueprint to scale. ठीक, हमने एक चीज एम्बुलेंस बना ली, हमारे वोकेशन ट्रेनिंग का है, और वी हैव स्पेंड लॉट ऑफ एफर्ट बिल्डिंग द राइट प्रोसेसेस. इनकी आईएसओ सर्टिफिकेशन हुई है, हमारी हेल्थ की आईएसओ सर्टिफिकेशन है. तो अब द नेक्स्ट लेवल है हाउ वी रेप्लिकेट इट इनटू अदर पार्ट्स ऑफ पाकिस्तान. एंड द वे वी थिंक इज द बेस्ट वे टू पार्टनर विद लाइक माइंडेड इंस्टीट्यूशंस और पार्टनर विद ऑर्गेनाइजेशंस दैट हैव एन इंटरेस्ट इन इट. सो फॉर इंस्टेंस इन एम्बुलेंसेस, the Sindh government has, under the public-private partnership, has given us the mandate to replicate Aman Ambulance in Thatta and Sajawal, and subsequent to that, 5 other districts of Sindh. So in a way, humne jo cheez banayi hai, it should benefit the rest of Sindh, and so it will, inshallah, within the next year or so, it will expand to another 7 districts, and then hopefully across Sindh, and we'd like it to go across Pakistan with other government entities. Similarly, with vocational training, either with government or with corporate, because of course, large corporates such as in auto, in industrial, have a huge need of human capital. So, wo jo hai na, we can partner with them and we replicate the Aman Tech model, let's say in Punjab, in Southern Punjab, in Central Punjab, in the CPEC corridor. So we look forward to doing that.
Okay. But tell me, in social entrepreneurship, now let's get to some conceptualization. How do you see social entrepreneurship taking shape in Pakistan, and what are the trends in social entrepreneurship or in philanthropic area? What are the trends that you see there, and what are the, since you're immediate to the situation, you worked in Pakistan, you've done it, you know the situation well, how do you see these areas evolving, and what are the weaknesses there, and what should be done to strengthen this area?
So social entrepreneurship is a new field globally. I don't think this field existed or research had been done 10 years ago. We want more research going into it to know what works and what doesn't work. We have a series of anecdotal evidence, some sound bites, but until economists and researchers go into it and really do rigorous evaluations, very difficult to know for sure. But from our experience of Aman Foundation, social entrepreneurship has two components to it, which is one is social. And the other one is entrepreneurship. You need to have an objective which has a social impact mandate.
Right.
Okay, you are maybe you operate in a not-for-profit, but you're solving a social problem. That is very important. You solve a social problem. But the methodology, the approach is very entrepreneurial and enterprise type mindset. So that basically means is when you're starting an enterprise, you have to be cost conscious. You have to be focused on talent, focused on process systems. All the things that a startup or an enterprise does in order to become big and scale, social entrepreneurs need to do the same thing. The challenge sometimes what happens is there is too much social and too little enterprise element. Entrepreneurship.
The trick is to find the right mix.
The trick is to find, it's an intellectual challenge and it's an emotional challenge to find the right mix. And it's very difficult to achieve that. But if we do, we'd be able to come up with a model which is far superior from the not-for-profit and complete donor-dependent and donor-led model to a complete corporate model. So something that gets the best of both the worlds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think the key is that in a profit-making enterprise, the kind that RF is running, it is very easy to see the bottom line, which is profit, and your shareholders and whoever can see the kind of money that they're getting. In social entrepreneurship, because, as you said, you've got a social objective, A, it's hard to monitor, and B, it's hard to motivate the recipients to be a participant in that, because they really don't see the benefit immediately. The benefit is long term. The people that you're training or looking after, they see the benefit long term. So, but in any case, so that I think those kinds of things will pose a problem. How do you measure your effort, and how do you evaluate it, and how can it be rewarding to the people who financed you? Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. And that's not enough thinking has gone into it, not enough debate has happened on that. And I think that's an important question, because if I were to be in RF's position, I would say that I have the option of giving money to Aman. I have given option to many to a not-for-profit B and C and D. Why is my money better with Aman, for that matter, versus NGO 2 or NGO 3, which you do when you are any kind of investor in anything? And that's a fair question to ask. How does my money get me better impact? And I think, and then thoda sa hamara jo impact evaluation, jise hum MLE kehte hain, measurement, learning and evaluation, that world has been too much based on theory and, the randomized controlled trials and surveys. I think what we need to take is, and what we've adopted in Aman, we've, you know, like taking operational metrics. If I are able to deliver quality at lower cost, so your cost has to be a very important element of it. If you're producing something which is too costly relative to what is available in the market, so certainly that's not going to sustain. So you need to bring down the cost, measure your impact, how many people are benefiting from it. So our vocational training program, how many people are getting jobs, how many people are getting jobs beyond the minimum wage? See? So what is your delta on that? These are very important questions we work on. We are solving it. We have new methodology we've come up to measure it. But these are ultimately needed for social enterprise sector to show performance, and for our investors who are, you know, donors, philanthropists, to know that their money is having the right impact.
So let me put it to you, this is, Jalal, this raises a very interesting issue, because, you know, the podcast that I do mainly for trying to get the economics sort of profession and, you know, thinkers in Pakistan involved, and but particularly to motivate young kids to take up research topics that are of interest. So the way you put it, I would think that Aman Foundation will offer these kids a lot of opportunity to do some very interesting research, into areas like evaluating your programs, like looking at the cost effectiveness of your programs, or, you know, all kinds of things I can think, all kinds of questions that I can think of. Is that something that you would like, you know, economist friends, for example, who are doing PhDs or MA theses or whatever, to come and, participate in, help you do that?
Nadeem, if you can help us do that, that'll be fantastic. If you can help put the word out, we are very interested. We believe we live and die by the impact that we create, and we can show that what we're putting the money is putting as having the maximum impact. For that, we need to think about impact strategy, how our programs can have more impact.
Right.
We have to see upfront what, how do you measure impact? What is it we measure? How we capture data, and then how do we report on a report impact? And for that, the whole thinking around impact evaluation, as I said, which is very much randomized controlled trials, which is very expensive and can take a lot of time, has to change to become something which is more efficient, more quick.
Randomized controlled trials are very, very controversial, even in the economics profession. There's a bunch of people who swear by them, but there's a large number of people. In fact, the Nobel Prize winner, forgetting the guy's name now, 2 years ago, he's written a huge paper on it, criticizing it. Many people have done that, but let's not get into that controversy. Let me just say to my audience, especially the students, that they should definitely take this up and look into doing research into this area, helping you out, furthering your work, as well as helping you think out new strategies, as well as helping you evaluate programs, etc. It could be a wealth of research for them, a wealth of ideas for them, and a collaboration with you. So having said that, let me move on to something else. Tell me, what do you see as the state of social entrepreneurship? Two things, because you've got social entrepreneurship, you've also got a foundation. So I want to discuss both things. Is Pakistan, for example, or the Pakistani wealthy class, the elite class, capable, or are they doing work like setting up foundations? Are they doing social entrepreneurship? Are people getting involved in it? And if not, tell me, what are the impediments?
I can't comment on people's, how their methodologies and everything, but I think generally, the way I see change and impact is from the startup world.
Mm-hmm.
So, where you have young entrepreneurs come in, mm-hmm. and they are, they're setting up enterprises, mm-hmm. which may be for profit, but they are having huge social impact. Mm-hmm. One such company is something called Ansar Management Company, which is setting up low-cost housing. So they're solving a social problem, which is a huge problem, which is urban housing, but they're doing it in an entrepreneurial and for-profit model. I think wahan pe I see a lot of positive trend in Pakistan. No matter what, Kareem, for me, is a very highly social, has a very strong social impact through access of mobility for women, mm-hmm. for that matter, which is a big constraint. Leading to a lot of employment generation, a lot of entrepreneurship creation. So although it's a for-profit company, but it has a huge social impact. So that is where I think a lot of, if you think about innovation and cutting edge, that is where that is coming from. It's from the startup world, from the early stage company world. Ye hamara yahan pe innovation aa raha hai. Hamara jo general philanthropic hai, that is around, of course, I think still around giving it to large not-for-profits, but focused on, causes, themes such as education, such as health, or unko diya ja raha hai. But I think what needs more is to back new innovative models which are disruptive, aur aap unko back karein, kyunki wo unka outsized impact kaafi ho sakta hai. At least that's I'm not wearing a hat of Aman Foundation, I'm wearing a hat as a Pakistani, looking from someone looking from inside. That is where I think that is where we can have some breakout success cases for social enterprises.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But in some sense, if I recall right, I don't know whether you've seen this or not, Jalal, there was a philanthropy report done by the Philanthropic Foundation in Islamabad, funded by donors. This was some, I think, 10 years ago or something. And that report painted a very rosy picture of philanthropy in Pakistan, saying that Pakistan is one of the most philanthropic nations, giving a lot of money to charitable causes. I don't know. Do you feel that at all now that you've studied Pakistan a little bit? Again, I'm not asking you to comment as a head of Aman Foundation. This is more you as a thinker. So please take your hat off as a head.
If I may think, I'll share with you as a Pakistani. Mm-hmm. I do think Pakistanis are very generous, mm-hmm. particularly I would say in Karachi. Mm-hmm. Let me say that the philanthropy over here, the amount of giving in Karachi is humongous, particularly from the industrialists, traders over here, and it's also in other parts of the country as well. Mm-hmm. But here in Karachi, it's very, very positive. But mera thoda sa, if I may, Dr. Saab, and I don't know what your view would be, my view is slightly wider than this, which is, if you consider generally taxation as a means of transfer from the wealthy to the not-so-wealthy, hence welfare, generally if you take that, I'm not saying all of it, but UK mein, when I used to, I pay taxes, but I never used to use NHS, I use mostly private insurance, okay, but jo mera tax jata tha, wo zyada jata tha social services and for poor. So if you consider the low tax to GDP ratio of Pakistan, which basically people, a lot of people not paying taxes, And if you think of tax as also a form of income transfer, then and you put that on one side and you put philanthropy on the other side, I think if you combine the two together, I don't think it's a rosy picture. If you understand what I'm
I look at that. Yeah, I can see that. But you know, agreed. So, but you are, the way you analyze it, you're putting the weight on taxation. Right, but is philanthropy, for example, I see what you're saying, and I remember what that famous philanthropy report said, that there's a lot of philanthropy. But you see, my problem is I think of philanthropy slightly differently. Philanthropy, there is a philanthropy that goes ahead. For example, dekh chadhana jaake kisi mazar pe. A lot of philanthropy there. The philanthropy was jo PIA when the plane was flying, they were cutting a bakra. You know, so we have a lot of that. We have this philanthropy of sacrificing a goat for an event or something, right? I think, to me, those events are really not a philanthropy as much as sort of self-gratification. I think what we need to think of philanthropy is much more the kind of thing that you're doing, that here there is a clear mandate and a clear desire to do something for those not so wealthy, for those who haven't had the luck in life or the success in life, right? We need to bring them up. That's what the society is all about. Now, if I look at it that way, I find very few enterprises like Aman Foundation, for example. I think, I mean, you can count Citizen Foundation, you can count, I mean, there are a few of them. I'm not saying there are none. But given the size of our population, 200 million people, and given the number of wealthy people, I find few. I mean, yes, some, there's now some people have set up universities. I mean, there are five or six universities that rich people have set up, maybe more, maybe 8 or 10 universities. But really, it doesn't go beyond much beyond that. It's not as well thought out, as structured as what you are doing. And that's why I'm raising this question about the issue of philanthropy in Pakistan, the issue of foundation raising in Pakistan. Then the other thing is what people do in Pakistan, which I've also noticed, correct me if I'm wrong. If they set up a foundation, if they set up a university or something, it's a family business. They never let go. What I like about what RF and Faiz have done, although I, as I said, I don't know them very well, and I'm not at all, I don't know Aman at all. You told me what you just now, that that's all I know. What I see is that they have a bit of a hands-off approach. They're not involved full time in it. They're not running it like a private foundation. Am I right?
That's right.
Yeah.
So this is, you've got a proper management team. You've got a CEO, CO. Yeah. We're running it on ground. Yes.
Now, this is something that I find very seldom in Pakistan. If even if they set up a foundation or a philanthropic thing, like, you know, all these schools, etc., it is the family that is running it. This is not professionally managed. It's not outside the setup. So that again kind of, you know, you mentioned enterprise, and you mentioned the fact that you're going to, you're also the entrepreneurial side, which is the management side, which is running it like a corporation, so that you can scale it up. You can maximize the use of money, right? It is being run like a profit-making corporation. That I don't see in Pakistan. That's why I think, when I think of philanthropy, I think of it that way. Like, I've studied a lot of foundations in the US. Go ahead.
I think after your observation is 100% observation here. And I think that comes from, you know, RF having created a business which is across 30, 40 countries, which is a professionalized global private equity firm, and has got investors who are global investors. So the thing is that, you know, you leave the work to be done by the professional managers, and you provide governance, you provide oversight, and you have the separation of that. I think this is the term which I said is, and I should have explained earlier more, which is what I call institutionalized philanthropy, which is about process systems and about professional and management, which is empowered. And certainly that's the case in Aman, and that's certainly the case in TCF. But certainly we need more examples like that, which, because there's a lot of money that goes into philanthropy, but if that can be delivered through an institutional philanthropy framework, I think the outcomes could be much
I think that you put it very well, that ultimately what we need is, you know, as you described, social enterprise. Right? Even whether we take out the word entrepreneurship, okay, it can be a social enterprise. But then the emphasis is on the word enterprise. It should be run like an enterprise. It should be run professionally. But there we have a problem. I mean, it's going to take us further off our field, but I think we'll do it next time. There's a question of, there is an issue with professionalization in Pakistan in every field. You are from the financial markets, so you know the financial field and the corporate field very well. I think we have the same issue in Pakistan on the corporate side too, because we don't have many companies that are run on professional lines, like separated from the shareholders.
We have or we don't have?
We don't have. Most of the companies are family owned.
So I think that you have mentioned that in Pakistan a situation which is just separation of ownership from management, it's not pervasive. So in a way, that's also reflecting the philanthropy.
That's also
in the business sector.
That's right. Okay, lastly, now we've extended it more than I think we should, but nevertheless, lastly, tell me, you now have got Karachi, fine, I appreciate that. You've got health and education, I appreciate that. You got a scalable model, you've got an enterprise that is being run professionally. Wonderful, all wonderful things. But the one thing that I find that when you think of, for example, somebody like Save the Children or somebody like Oxfam or whatever, they could not resist over time to get into a situation where they might want to influence policy. They were doing this charity or whatever thing, and now they are so heavily into the policy world. They're trying to influence policy. As you've seen, Oxfam has put out a huge thing about this 8 people who own all the wealth of the world, or equivalent to half the poor people in the world. So anyways, Oxfam is pushing for policy. Is that something that Aman Foundation is going to do?
First, my question to you, would you think that is, being an economist in the planning commission, in the planning... do you think that is something Aman Foundation, with this implementation experience and knowing how things actually happen, should go into? And do you think that's a gap area that, particularly in the context of Pakistan, is an area where we can play a positive role? I think that I should ask you that question.
I would certainly say yes, because look, the point is, A, you've got a track record now, and B, your donors, RF and whatever, Abraj, has a track record in the international world. You've got global experience. I mean, Abraj is stretched all the way to Latin America. So you've got global experience from there. You've got now your local experience. You've got this setup, which is, again, substantial experience now. But ultimately, the biggest payoff is in policy. If you can get what you've learned from your social enterprise or entrepreneurship, if you can get these ideas into policy, the government is groping with schools, government is groping with hospitals, they don't know how to manage them, they don't know how to run healthcare. If you can somehow get into that policy nexus as well, maybe even if not a seat at the table, have at least some influence on policy so that your experience can be multiplied across the country. The only way to multiply it across the country, apart from scaling up, city by city, which is fair enough, which you'll do, I'm sure. But I think ultimately, if you can fix policy, or at least contribute to fixing policy, you can have a much bigger impact.
Nick, I think we are on the same page on that. We needed to be able to have the operational experience,
right,
the insight, the credibility, the track record of going out in the field, of having done things.
Fair enough.
And now bringing that insight into what we call thought leadership, and really original thought leadership.
Exactly.
Not driven by any agenda, but driven by the only purpose of, coming up with good ideas for the sake of Pakistan.
Exactly.
And I think this is an area that we are evaluating. That particularly for skills development, for education and health, that could be the next stage for us, that we can
I'll,
do that. And for
I'll
that,
add
we need,
something to
we
that.
Need good researchers.
Yeah, no,
we
I think
need good
that's
researchers.
Absolutely.
We need good thought leaders and writers and content creators for doing that.
You're absolutely right, but you have the capability now to do that. But I would add another thing that's very important. You also have the network through Abraj of about 40, 50 countries, right?
Yeah.
You can, in a sense, crowdsource the knowledge through that network. You can also put in touch Pakistani policymakers, researchers are very isolated. You can also put these guys in touch with other countries and their experiences, get them to share. I mean, these are all things that you can think of, and I'm saying, I'm not saying that you should do any one of them, but all I'm saying is these are things that I would think that, you know, the next step would be for you to have some more influence on policy, and especially to take the knowledge that you've gained from here as well as the world and project it onto the thought processes in policy circles as well as in thinking circles, I would say. One of the reasons that I'm pushing very hard on this research angle, because I want our economists to understand what's happening here, because they're too distant from it. They think that this is not economics, whereas this is real serious economics nowadays, and lots of people are working on the social entrepreneurship in Pakistan in my area in economics. Lots of PhDs are happening in this, and therefore I would invite everybody to look at it, and I would invite you to also get involved in that. And the way I look at it, Jalal, again, correct me if I'm wrong, I was giving this talk yesterday at GMU, and I was saying that development is really a transformation process. We have to transform society, and the most important transformation has to take place in our heads. We have to change minds, you know. These bombers who put a bomb in Lahore today, instead of putting a bomb, hey guys, let's build our society together, right? And that kind of a transformation can only happen if all of us put our heads together. And what you've done is a remarkable thing, and you help the researchers and others around you, the policymakers even, to elevate themselves to a level which you guys can see from your vantage point around the world.
Yeah. No, I think you're absolutely right. It's about force multiplier. The purpose of creating an institution is, and not calling it RF and Fazal Naqvi, was to create an organization that can go beyond an individual, a person, an organization, and actually infect that same thinking in other spheres of Pakistan, including government. You know, one way we've already done that in a way is through the public-private partnership, whereby our model, our operations, our excellence of Aman Foundation will be executed across Sindh. So, same Aman ambulance quality standards would be done there. So in a way, you know, that will be replicated. Instead of government doing it, we will do that. But I think ye ek operational implementation hai that needs to be fortified with a thought leadership process, whereby you're thinking and apne kaha jo crowdsource ke hai, it's a great idea. Mm-hmm. And actually, when you get off it, I can talk to you more about some of the research partnerships we have. We can and actually bring in the best minds to think about across the world, but also what has worked in other parts of the world and Pakistani minds, to work on solving some of the greatest challenges of Pakistan.
Jalal, thank you very much. Now that you've raised this issue at the end, what we'll do is another podcast on that area, because I think that's very important for our people to understand and think about it. So now you owe me two podcasts, one on this and the other on financial markets. But having said that, let me end by thanking you, and through you, thanking your founders, RF and Pfizer and Abraj Capital, whoever is involved, Bill and Gates Melinda Foundation. I think it's a wonderful enterprise, and we owe you all a debt of gratitude, and inshallah, we'll remain in touch.
Soch Bachar ke saath, mera naam Nadeem Ul Haq hai,
aur mera naam Anjum Altaf hai.